Amen. I would encourage you, if you are used to a time of worship where you're singing songs and you're not used to getting spaces for you to do your own thing of just talking to God yourself, I would encourage you to do that. Sometimes it's okay to sit down while everyone else is standing up. It's okay to kneel down and pray when everyone else is doing something else. We don't have to do everything together, but we are here in His presence together. So there are times where God would call you to lay things down. I would ask you to do that as and when the Lord prompts you to. For those of you who are newer here, if you're visiting us or you're watching online, my name is Judah. I'm one of the pastors here at Word of Grace, and it's a real privilege for me to share the word with you this morning. Today, and for the next 2 weeks, actually, I'm going to be sharing a word that has been in my heart for a little while, but it is coming, a lot of this is coming out from my heart, more so than this is something I think you need to be taught. This is more, I want to share some things that I see happening that I think we need to pay attention to. So this is more a pay attention kind of a thing. And I also want to invite you into some things that God is doing, okay? So those are my two objectives. I want to share my heart over the things that God's showing us as a church and what we are doing, but also I want to invite you into something as well. So look out for those things along the way. To start things off, I have been here now, as of June, end of this month, I was on these steps right here. There were a whole bunch of us gathered around, and this church family ordained me to be their pastor 10 years ago, okay? And it's been an amazing 10 years. And God has been faithful to us. God has been faithful to us. But I come here, and the way I am speaking to you today is as someone who has been called to shepherd this family. That's, for those of you who are not familiar with those kinds of terms, it is to do with helping to guard, helping to tend, to feed, to nourish people, to take care of a family. The context that you might be more familiar with is fathers and mothers. And God has placed in the church fathers and mothers. And in the church, there's a context of elders being called into service to guard over, to watch over, to be people who look out for the things that the family is not necessarily looking out for, to pay attention to those things. So I came here 10 years ago as an under-shepherd. So the chief shepherd is Jesus. He's the big shepherd. He's the one who called us out when we were on the rocky cliffs somewhere doing really silly stuff. With his staff, he pulled us out and he brought us in to a safe place. His sheep know his voice and they follow him. So that's the chief shepherd we all belong to. And in that context, he has raised up in our church shepherds who will help us tend to the flock, to see that we're all fed, to see that we're all doing well. So I come here as a newbie, not knowing what to do. It is like a new father learning to parent alongside seasoned parents. So when I joined this church and the leadership team, it was one of those things where I was starting to see how much God had invested in this church with fathers and mothers who had already walked a lot of the journey that this church had been through. And for those of you who have heard me preach for a while, you will always hear me give you sometimes very, very challenging things, sometimes to the point of almost cutting you. And I want you to understand my heart in this is out of Ephesians 5. This is a passage that often people think has to do with marriage, which it is on a tangential level in one sense, but it is about Jesus and his church. It says, "Husbands, love your wives as Christ loved the church and gave himself up for her, that he might sanctify her, having cleansed her by the washing of the water with the word, so that he might present the church to himself in splendor, without spot or wrinkle or any such thing, that she might be holy and without blemish." As someone who's called to care for the church, it's easy to find things wrong with the church. But I want you to see what Jesus sees. He sees a spotless bride. I mean, take a look around at the state of the church today and you'd be hard-pressed to see a beautiful bride. But that's who Jesus sees. And that's who he calls you and me. So when we fall in love with the church of Jesus Christ, the way we behave when we see things that need to be addressed or things that need to be changed or things that need to be brought into order is always in the context of loving the one he loves. So husbands, love your wives like that. Wives, submit to your husbands as Christ, as unto Christ. That's what this passage is trying to show us. It's not about marriage per se. It is about Christ and how he lays everything on the line to say she is absolutely without spot. There's nothing wrong with her. And he is the one who does the washing and the cleansing and the purifying. That is the invitation. So, as a shepherd of this church family, I did not shrink back. And this is Paul writing in Acts chapter 20. "For I did not shrink back from declaring the whole counsel of God to you. Pay careful attention to yourselves and all the flock in which the Holy Spirit has made you an overseer, to care for the church of God which he obtained with his own blood. I know that after my departure, fierce wolves will come among you, not sparing the flock. And from among your own selves will arise men speaking twisted things to draw disciples away after them. Therefore be alert, remembering that for 3 years I did not cease day or night to admonish you and everyone with tears. And I now commend you to God and the word of his grace, which is able to build you up and give you an inheritance among those who are being sanctified. I did not covet anyone's silver or gold or clothing. You yourself know that these hands have ministered to my necessities and to those who are with me. In all things, I've shown you that by working hard in this way, we must help the weak and remember the words of the Lord Jesus Christ, how he himself said, 'It is more blessed to give than to receive.'" Now, this is an elder talking to other elders. So Paul was the guy who started a lot of the churches we see in that Asia Minor, that whole area around what you would call modern-day Turkey and those areas. All of that place was a place where he went and planted a lot of churches. And he's talking to these guys and he's saying, "I cannot pull any punches with you because the job you're doing is a serious one. It is something that you have to pay attention to. Because there's bad stuff out there, but also in the context, do you realize that these are people that Jesus paid for with his blood, and he said, watch over them." So that is my context. So I'm responding to the call of the chief shepherd. So I'm not saying this in a domineering sense. I'm not. So when I say certain things, I'm not lording it over you. And I pray that this is the testimony you will start to feel with those who lead among us. That it is not a context of people who demand something from you that they're not willing to do by example. In 1 Peter chapter 5, it says that. So I exhort the elders among you as fellow elder and a witness of the sufferings of Christ, as well as a partaker in the glory that is to be revealed. Shepherd the flock of God that is among you, exercising oversight, not under compulsion, but willingly, as God would have you, not for shameful gain, but eagerly, not domineering over those in your charge, but being examples to the flock. And when the chief shepherd appears, you will receive an unfading crown of glory. I want to share my heart with you about where we are at, because I see the move of God in our church over the years. We're in a time of generational transition as a church. And that is why I thought it was important that I share some things with you so that we're not just letting life happen to us. I want us to happen to life, if that makes sense. If you can have a plan for being intentional about what you're doing with life, life just doesn't happen to you. So there are just things that are happening which are beyond our control. There are things that are within your control. And there are things that you can develop to be in your control. So there are things that are, a lot of the time we just move through life and we move through church gatherings like, oh, well, this is a good shot. We had a good run. Yep, good. We're done. No, there is so much more, especially when you see the stakes of caring for the family of God. It's a big one. For those of you who don't know, just historically, our church, our gathering together goes back about 50 years to a living room. Harry and Mary Lou, all those years ago, around 74, so it's about 50 years ago, started as a Bible study. Most of the people were students and young people and young couples, and a few older ones smattered in there. But by if you were to look at them, you would call them the young church. They were like the babies, all growing up together in many ways. So they were like the older couples were in their what? Mid-30s? The older couples were in their 30s. That's how this church started. Since then, we've gone through transitions. Some of them were exciting, some not so exciting. Some of them were really painful. But the church we are today in many ways is nothing like the church that started. Now, this is not just happenstance. This is not just because life happened to us. And that's what I want you to see. There is something that is happening here that took many years to happen. It wasn't something that just started when I showed up. Are you hearing me? So the things that God did and is doing in the church we call Word of Grace is not something that started with Word of Grace. But at the same time, it is something that in each season, God does such a new thing that if we look back and pine for what we had, we will always be looking backwards. And God is doing things quite deliberately in each generation that we need to pay attention to. So yes, it is entirely different. It's nothing like the church that started. But guess what? The people who are in their 20s and 30s are now having grandkids or have almost entirely moved out of what we would call active employment. The generation that started this church. So, the world that they are experiencing right now is entirely different from the one they started this journey with. And they're watching a generation stepping into that season of life, who have an entirely different world to deal with. Almost nothing like the world that they started off in. So there's not much similarity there. So the reason I'm saying these things is you're facing a whole new world for the whole new set of life considerations. The life considerations that, say, Alan and Carol, when you guys were first raising kids, are not the considerations your daughter is having for when she's raising her kids. Entirely different context. So, when there is such a difference, what are the things that should remain the same? What are the things that we need to make sure are tethered to what is true, to what is godly, what is holy, what is of glory to God in all these things, things that are deliberately seeking the will of God and not moving the landmarks. So there are certain things that we need to keep through generations. And there are things that are like, it's nothing the same. Entirely different, not even starting from the same premise. So that leads us to see that some of the things that we're going to work through are going to be mainly preferential things. A lot of the things that we discover our lives are built on, in many ways, are preferential. I prefer to save this way. I prefer to invest this way. I prefer to raise my kids this way. It's not necessarily that that was the way. It wasn't like there was a Bible verse that said you have to do it this way. But there is a counsel of God, the whole counsel of God, that says this is the way I would like you to raise your home. This is what it means when you say, as for me and my house, we will serve the Lord. What does that mean? How does that translate to 2024? We're in our 20s. We're starting a family. We don't know what to do with our kids. What does that mean? Because it meant something in 1974. So there is a transition. So what I'm inviting those who are in that generation that started us off, some of them are still here in this room, right? And God is using you in this season to call back to a time where you saw the faithfulness of God. And you watch people make their initial foray into, okay, I got one kid. Okay, now I have two kids. And then that third kid, and then some of them are in a different stage of life. We've moved past having kids, but now we're like, how do we raise these kids? Some of you are just getting into college or in the throes of working out what to choose as a major. Should I marry this person? This person thought they were, I thought they said they were this, but they're not that, and I don't know what to trust them. Or we have generations sitting in front of you that have been through all that, different timeline. Slightly different timeline. So what are the things that are established as true, godly, dependent on God that I can draw from while I'm still alongside each other, as long as we're still alongside each other? For this series, you know, like a thesis statement, you know what a thesis statement is? Like, one of the things that I wanted to make so that when I put thoughts down, it was clear for what I wanted to convey. It's this: a church that grows into maturity and also lasts through the infancy of a new generation is a church that pays attention to transitions well. So if we're going to be a church that pays attention to transition well, we cannot always say the goal is maturity. If the goal was maturity, in which context? Because there is a context that some of us have who are, let's say, the if you were to put it in three banks, the generation that started this church, the generation that came up in the 80s, which would be more like my generation, and then the generation that is now entering into their mid-20s and under. You've not yet explored family life. You're not even sure about what it means to be married yet. And you got the people who have like, this is what it means to have a job. This is what it means to serve the Lord. This is what it means to commit my time. This generation did all of that. They're now at a place where it's like, how do I love my grandkids? How do I speak into the lives of my children who are far, near, the ones in the midst of us? How do I serve the Lord well as I finish the race well? All of this is happening all at the same time. But if their context, which built this church in many ways, is what drives how we develop these two generations, what will end up happening is maturity will have a different flavor. Whereas, put it in a simpler context, if I were to talk about how to write an essay, okay, and I look at my daughter's essay. She's in second grade. She just finished second grade. She won the best, most likely to be an author award in her school, right, in her class. And I read that, and I'm like, maturity, what is this? This is like 5 sentences of gibberish, right? But why would we laugh? It's hilarious. I mean, she has a very great comedic delivery in the way she writes things. I'm like, this is amazing. And to enjoy it for the maturity level it is at. It could be even beyond this generation. It could be here. So when people walk into a church gathering or people walk into a context, there is one thing that I want to establish right out of the gate. We're not talking about church attendance. And this is the invitation part. The invitation is to be part of the family. Not in some, again, because that phrase is so overused in Christian circles that it has lost meaning. Church is meant to be family deliberately, not because it's a good, cozy tagline. We're family. We're all together. No. We're not all, I mean, how many of you can say you're in something that you're going through together with people in the church? A couple here or there, right? But if you were to say, my whole life, I can absolutely, let's go to Acts chapter 1 or 2. It says, they shared everything in common, everything that they did, everything that they had, their kids' clothes, their barf stuff, their money, their car. I mean, this is something that some of these people in this room have experienced firsthand. They lived together. They spent their times together. When one did not have money for something, there were always needs met. These are all things that happened without let us bless the people who have needs fund. Now, times change. There are things that we've grown bigger. There are things that we need to establish as ground rules for how we use resources. Sure. But it's a heart thing I'm talking about. So the invitation is into a heart bond which says, I'm part of this family. So if I'm part of this family, when I see 8-year-old or 9-year-old scratchings on a paper that is called an essay, I delight in it. I delight in it to encourage it and to develop it into a maturity which someday will be great papers or great prose that is written for people to read. That was just an illustration. But the context of, in spiritual life, there are things that God has shown us that we are so sure that this is the place we start, and this is how you construct it, and this is how you walk through it, and this is how you navigate it. They have no clue what you're talking about, but they know that they need God. Are you willing to work with someone who just says they need God? Okay. Now, because you signed up to be in a family, I will check on you if you're still needing God next year. And there might be a kick coming up your butt. Because at some point, you need to stop just needing God and constantly to saying, I know I need God. So now the next step is I need to work with God through the things that he's given me. He's given me his word. No, I've never read the word. I don't ever think I will read the word. Why? Because I just don't get it. That's an okay response if you're an 8-year-old scratching on paper saying this is an essay. There is a developing through life which God has called you through. And it's not going to happen on this person's timeline, this person's timeline, or this person's timeline. It takes, maturity happens in different stages. But nonetheless, We're constantly looking out for each other. The oversight and the care of the Church of Jesus was never meant to be an elder job. Which is why, have you noticed, eldering was a context of saying, can you step back and look at the whole picture? Because the part of developing, shepherding, caring for, meeting needs was supposed to be a one another job. And when the one another starts to go slightly lopsided or get out of whack, there is someone back here looking at the whole thing going, that's lopsided. We need to address that. Does that make sense? So in the context of caring for the church of God, what I want to pass on to you is a burden that says, this is my family. And I will use the rubric that we as a method that we have used as elders to try and just talk through what are the places our hearts need to be changed on how we develop in caring for God's family. It starts always with a place of saying, I'm accountable to this group. It always starts there. It doesn't start with, yeah, I'm here, I've attended this. You might have attended. The issue is, have you changed your heart posture to say, this is my people? When you do that, it changes from, this is what I thought needed to be done in the service, and this is what I think we need to do with kids ministry, and this is what I think we need to do with youth, and this is what I think. Sure, there are lots of programs that we could do. The issue is, are these your kids? Are these your parents that you're caring for? Are these people that you value above all else that would say, what is it that you need? What is it that I can do to help come alongside you that you develop in God? And I could come alongside people in this generation and say, God has much for you. Can I walk alongside you that you finish well? So it's not just a one-sided deal where this generation has to now quickly like barf everything that they have onto people before they take off. No. See, there, that's a lopsided, and that in many ways, in leadership context, people talk about succession in like a very kind of transactional way. Like, you got to make sure that you've got enough lead time so that you get like, push it all down there, and then when you take off, they're running. I get that, but we're talking about family. We're talking about family. So it doesn't happen on the same timeline. It's not like, yep, 2026, January 1st, next generation, you're up, we're checking out. It doesn't happen that way. So it's something that happens over time. And it has been happening since, I would say, about 2015, where we started into this transition and we need to start paying attention. Because, and one of the things I wrote down to the elders is, the word of grace of 2030 will have transitioned whether we do it well or not. That's 6 years away, folks. 6 years from now. Many of you who are right now trying to figure out how to feed little babies will have kids in school. Some of them will be off to college. This is, so if you're sitting there going, oh it's part of, no. Don't let life happen to us as the church. We have to pay attention because there are things that we need to receive from this generation over here that we deliberately go for. And this generation has to be very deliberately saying, this is an entirely new world. This is an entirely new context. What are the things, if I were to leave the hallmarks of what God has done in my life to another generation, what would it be? These are the things that established me in the faith. These are things that established me in my I trust in God. These are those things. I want to pass those things on. The other stuff, yeah. How do we navigate things well? So part of this generational shift is us paying attention to some of those things. I've got five things that I thought just for the sake of this conversation, would be helpful things to say. These are hallmarks that we want to make sure that we have working within us. And how we do it, I'll explain in a bit. We need to be a church that seeks the kingdom first. And this is why I, in some of my outline notes, I said, this series in one way could be called Kingdom Works Parts 4 and 5. It is literally picking up where Donovan basically took us over the past 3 weeks. The context has to be, if we're seeking transformational change, if we're seeking to be part of what God is doing, it's going to take a shift of mindset of whose kingdom am I building. I have to be drawn into that place of saying, Matthew 6:33, seek first his kingdom and his righteousness. And all these other things that I'm concerned about, quite legitimately, these are things that I have to keep my eye on. But I seek his kingdom first and his righteousness, and all these things will be added to me. If that drives my life, I'm able to live with an abandon that little sort of people telling you this step, this step, this step. There is a certain release you have because you know your destiny is not controlled by you. It's a church that seeks the kingdom first. It's a church that's focused on the future. And what I mean by that is we need to be a church that is discipling or making disciples from scratch. It's easy for churches to inherit half disciples, quarter disciples, people who are exploring Christianity from other churches. But what does it look like to go preach the gospel and start someone on their journey of first meeting Jesus and walking through it with them? A church that is growing and a church that is doing well is a church that is always preaching the gospel, not in meetings, out there. The meeting should be the aberration where we're saying, this is something that we need to call everybody here. Let's do that. Crusades and tent meetings, those are all like, that is not the regular church life. Because when do you get fed then? If I'm constantly preaching to you the elementary principles of a gospel of salvation from sin. We need to do other things, right? You need to all develop in other things too. So the preaching of the gospel must be done, but we're willing to walk from scratch with disciples. So raising a generation to live matters equally as much, if not more, than living out our current generation's maturity paradigm. So there is something that we feel this is what we should be doing as people of God. There is a maturity paradigm that we have. This is what it means to be mature in Christ. In walks somebody who is a total noob. What's that guy doing here? Why did he come? They don't worship like us. I guess we'll make it uncomfortable enough so they'll leave. Yes. Okay. And then a few weeks later, they're gone. So we don't need to worry about them. Why? Because we're focused on, we need maturity. Whichever generation, we need maturity. What maturity looks like to my generation? Oh, this is what we know. This is what it means to serve the Lord. And this is what it means to raise your kids. A lot of finger wagging. This is what it means to make disciples. You walk alongside people who mess it up gloriously. And then you say, that is not the way of Christ. You can't be F-bombing around your kid and then wondering why they struggle with their language. And why they have outbursts at school. Sure, you were angry that time. But if you do not have a control over your tongue, don't expect your kid to. Are you blaming? No, I am. But it is an us problem. It is not a you problem. So when you're walking alongside couples, when you're walking alongside young people, it's not, they don't think like you do. They don't do things like you do. I mean, like half the conversations I have with my kids, it's like, whoa, that's totally not how I would think about that. But It is a whole new paradigm. And I need to learn to adjust, especially if I'm intent on raising the next generation. If I'm convinced that they just got to keep up with me, because this is what is right, I'm telling you this as someone who was, and I still struggle with this at times, but I grew up in a very principled manner. And for that generation, that worked in some ways. Some of it did not yield the fruit that we expected it to. So the Gen Xers and Boomers who raised my generation, some of that helped, but some of that crushed people. People like me made it through because you demanded much of me. So I had to rise to the challenge. There are others who are like, I don't know what the heck this is. I cannot do this. Because no one heard me out. I don't understand this. I don't know how this works. And no one took the time to say, it's okay, I'll walk this through with you. Rather than saying, I'm standing here, get. So there are things in developing that we have to realize. God has put us alongside people. In the same church will be sitting people of both shades. People who are like, challenge me, push me, ask of me great things and I will get there. And then there are people who are like, I don't know how to do that. I can't do that. And you have to be willing to say, God made you different and I'm willing to walk through this with you. Is your heart, and that, the thing we always get back to is, does your heart belong to the Lord? If your heart belongs to the Lord, I'm willing to work with you. Whatever it takes, if it means I got to wake up at 2 o'clock because you're again in that same mess, I will do it with you. But I will always challenge you to make the fundamental commitment, which is, my life belongs to Jesus. If you're willing to do that, I will walk with you. If it means you look like the biggest mess, I will still walk with you. It is a church, so the third thing, seeks the kingdom first, focused on the future, not in a modern, let's get the new guys in mode. Do you understand what I was saying by all that? What it means to be a future-focused church? It's a church that learns backward, but lives forward. So you're constant, and this is the thing that I started off with about not moving certain boundaries. There are certain things that God has established that if I move them, we're now dealing in... Yeah, you got your way, I got mine. There are some things which are that, but there are some things that are not up for debate. And we got to be clear about what those things are as we walk through life. So you're learning, you're teaching, and passing on testimony that energizes faith for what is ahead in God. So this generation honors and receives instruction well from the previous generation. So there is a seeking of counsel. There is a seeking of what was navigated before. Some of it well, some of it bad. That is one of the greatest things about life. I've learned more from the mistakes. This is as I'm sharing this as someone who's very, very close with my parents. I've learned more about what it is about life from the mistakes my parents made, which they took a while, but in towards the latter years, especially that I had with my dad, things that he would sit and he would say, son, I totally blew this. Which is why I'm talking about that whole issue of being principled. The principles and the things of God, which are so essential, can sometimes crush the people we're trying to help. The very thing that was meant to give them life gives them death instead. So we're sitting there. That was just one little nugget. He says, son, it counts more that you love them well. Don't flinch. Don't change the path. Don't say, okay, I guess then we won't do that. No. If that's what God has purposed for you guys to do, do that. But it might take more time than you thought. Are we willing? Are we committed to take the time? So there are certain things that when you're seeking from another generation, that you're going to say, how can we do this so that doesn't happen again? There are things that you and I grew up in faith, and we're like, these things were so precious. I have conversations with many of us in the church, especially those who I knew since I was a teenager. Like Frank was someone who taught me when I was, 13 years old in India, right? And we were in a Bible study, and there were things that we would receive, as a young teenager. Like some of the most formative things that I have in my life, aside from my father, some of the older folks in our church know, when I was in England, there was this couple, Timmy and Sheila Bateson, old, wonderful, very refined British actor. He's acted in many famous movies, Harry Potter and stuff like that. But he was such a simple man, but very profound. And he was in my small group. And he and I would sit, and I still remember, I was a 19-year-old kid who had just started earning money. And I said, I don't understand this whole tithing thing. He could have written a whole dissertation on it, right? But at that time, Uncle Timmy, as I called him, dear Judah. Yeah, and he would always say things like that. But very, very sweet, mildly, but he would say things so clearly. He was like, so what is it that belongs to you? That he asked me that question. So what out of the money you're earning belongs to you? I said, well, all of it. He's like, so how much do you pay in taxes? And, he went through my paycheck and he helped me figure out how, because I was asking him about how to save and things like that. And he sat and he says, it's a totally different, when you realize that your life belongs to him. He's like, so now what does he want you to present to the Lord? He's like, so I said, everything. He said, okay, then everything. I said, I cannot sustain that. I was like, I got to eat. So there were certain things that happened in the heart conversations where my heart shifted on giving, where now the Lord could ask of me 100% of what I make, and it would not be a weird ask. Because it was no longer a conversation about 10% or 10, 12%, if you add before tax, after, all of those conversations were useless conversations. By the time I got done with the conversation, because I was learning from a generation, a heart that belongs to the Lord. Do you see what I mean? So, and some of these things don't happen without seeking out the conversation. Because you would much rather, and this is something that we got to pay attention to, because the generation we're raising for the first time, which is different between these two generations, our generation, which is more Gen X, millennial, and the boomer generation, we're an entirely face-to-face generation. You got your source, your counsel, from singular sources. It was very established. It was clear. If I needed a question answered, I would come back to that primary source. Either it was dad or mom, the Britannica, or somebody that you trusted locally, someone you knew who had a face. But this generation, and this is something that is very unique, because I noticed this, because it's the generation just after me, the millennial into Gen Z, the Zennial generation, is the first generation on the earth to entirely grow into marriage and family life with personal devices that are relationship tools. So their devices are ways of communicating, heart issues. There are things that are written down. There are things that are... So it's not just like letters anymore, which had a personal... which would have been the old version of it. But we're talking about communication on a heightened level that is 24 hours of the day, which are used as relationship tools for not just yourselves, but for your kids, counsel, all kinds of things are being received without a filter. Before there was a filter where you could get, when you had the conversation, you had the conversation. That was it. There's a conversation that's going on the whole time. Some of it's not helpful. So to recognize that paradigm difference. So the way we would have dealt with it is, let's sit down, let's talk through it. Their generation's like, well, if you didn't text me at 3, by 3:05 I've made the decision. Do you understand? So there are certain things that how we navigate discipling and raising a next generation has to shift, has to be very, very clear, has to be very intentional. Because some of these things are not going to change backwards. But we need to speak into that to deliberately call for change on certain things. This generation is one that is more marked by mistrust of leadership. Whereas in the previous generation, there was like, once we established who our people were, there was a clear, this is what we're doing. That was it. I don't have to ask way too many questions. This generation asks 500 questions. Some of the situations that we're dealing with has precipitated that. So clear communication and well-being are higher priorities in this generation. Hard work and dependability were hallmarks of the one that went before. So how do you marry the benefit of both those things? How do we become more clear in what we say and what we communicate, and very clearly addressing care of what the personal need was, versus saying, there are times where I will raise you up to be more dependable. Putting in the hard work over time matters. It's not going to be something that just ministers to you right now. How do we bridge that gap? Those are the conversations to have. So do you see, when we're dealing with two generations, it's not just, I really need this. Guess what? You're going to go through hard stuff right now. So that's where an older generation has the benefit of coming alongside and saying, I know it hurts. So address that care need. But this is what hard work looks like. The important work of raising your kid. No, they're not going to always be like this. Or if you're in college, no, you're not always going to be single and have no problems and no money to buy food. There are things that you need to work through. Some of this is going to take time. So learning backward and living forward is a very intentional thing of saying, we don't neglect what we learned in the past, but we are making sure that we're preparing for another generation. We're always saying, how do I leave a legacy that matters? That what they carry out is not, well, they never had any time for us. Or that was just, they were just stuck in their ways. That should never be said of the generations that go ahead. We are always a generation that pours into the next one. We are a church that plans for change. We intentionally pass the baton. So like in a relay, where you have to pass the baton, but we intentionally do it. We don't do it because they grabbed it out of our hand. You know, have you seen like handovers where sometimes the handover is like the guy's like, and that leads to messy situations. And that's what I'm saying. We're not just talking about this like an organization. We're talking about family. I care for the person who's handing me the baton. It's not like, dude, your turn's over. Just give me. It's not just give me the baton. It's not just, come on, I'm done with this. Yeah, take it. It's not one of those kind of things. So the passing of the baton is usually one of the most contested things and one of the most precarious things. Because if you drop it, you've dropped it. And unfortunately, in church life, we call that, oh, well, that church had its season. There's a reason why there, all across America, this is a stat, right? The number of dying churches, the church isn't dying. It's just that people decided, there, I don't care about passing a baton. Let someone start another church somewhere. So there wasn't a concern, and this is what I said, where seeking maturity is one thing, but growing into the infancy of another generation is handling the transition. Because while our generations, this generation and this generation, fade out into handing over things, we need to know that you have the strength to be this generation. To be this generation. Otherwise, what happens is you end up with a whole bunch of old people with no young people, which is a statement of a lot of churches, or churches that really think, we're the guys who are really cool because we started a church and we're really here, we did it. And there are nobody who can tell us all the rocks that are coming up ahead. Nobody. So what ends up happening? We go bash our heads on rocks and our churches implode. And that has been happening too. So to mend some of these things, we got to make sure that we're intentionally planning for the change. Intentionally seeking. So if we're a younger church, are we intentionally seeking older couples and their counsel? There are several in our community, right? Our church has a wealth of them. Who I know speaking to lives of people outside of our church, which is great. That's how the church of God was meant to be. And lastly, a church that is released to serve with joy. Released. Not constrained, not bound. You must do these things because you're this generation. This is on you. If you don't get this, you know, you're going to screw this up. Hey, if you don't really get on with this and that you must develop faster, you must do these things and you must serve this many weeks. And if you take joy out of the mix, we've messed it up. Can I quickly give you some practical things that we can work on? So those are just going to be like hallmarks that we're going to have to pay attention to. Okay? Seeking the kingdom first, being future focused, learning backward but living forward, planning for change, and releasing one another to serve with joy. So where joy is being snuffed out, we pay attention to it and say, no, we're not going to do that, because that is moving towards legalism, which draws us into more burden, where the burden of the church becomes the priority rather than this is what my family needs. So this is the first way we can do, and this Donovan touched on this, we must be compelled by love. All of this starts to work when love becomes the fundamental motivator. Love one another fiercely and without reservation. John 13, verse 34 and 35 says, a new commandment I give you, that you love one another just as I have loved you. By this all people will know that you're my disciples, if you have love for one another. This is an agape love which says, you're family to me. I don't attend with you. I've moved from a place of just saying I'm accountable to saying I'm responsible for your well-being. Do you see that transition? I'm accountable? Yeah. You scratch my back, I'll scratch yours. We pay attention to each other. Yeah, we got that. Now it's not just scratch my back, I scratch yours. We're starting to say, oh no, there's a sense of need that I'm starting to see that I have a role to play here, to a place where I'm saying, what do we need? What is it that we need to get done? In family context, I have this conversation with my kids a lot. I'm not expecting you to be me, but if you're a child in our home, there comes a point where my 5-year-old or 4-year-old right now, she knows she's part of the family. You can take your dish and put it in the dishwasher. You're 4. You've learned the route. Now, do I have to demand it off a 4-year-old? No. Will she mess it up? Will she spill stuff on the way? Will she drop her spoon? Quite likely, because she didn't know to hold the spoon and the bowl with 2 hands. But that's part of that. But there is an accountability I'm demanding of her to say, this is what I'm expecting, but I'll work with you. To hear now saying, some of my other kids, it seems a little unfair, but I'm like, breakfast time, it's on you. You know where the other siblings are. This is what responsibility means. In responsibility, my love for the family trumps all things. The fact that you, as a 4-year-old, messed up your taking your dish to the dishwasher, totally your fault. but I'm responsible for you. So we explained the whole thing of what we as parents do. I said, guess what? We're responsible for all of you. So when you guys leave things all over the place, guess who ends up doing it? Why? Because we're responsible. But it is not responsible out of compulsion. It's responsible out of love. And that allows you to do this, which is 1 Peter 4:8. Above all, love one another earnestly, since love covers over a multitude of sins. In developing and growing a church that grows through the infancy generation, the infancy of a new generation, you're going to have to do a lot of that. Because there are things that they think are passable that you're like, it's not. That totally is not. That would not pass. But because I'm committed to you, I cover over, not cover up, but cover over with my ability and say, let's keep moving. I'll help you take the dish to the dishwasher this time. I'll help clean up that mess you made just outside where the leftover milk from your cereal, which you dropped, instead of pouring it down the sink. All of those little things that in infancy you're like, yeah, I don't get it. What's the big deal? I put the dish there. And then suddenly you find responsibility will move to the place where authority can be handed. Where I can say to my son at some point in the near future, I'm going to leave you responsible, but you tell me the schedule for when we're going to mow the lawns. I'll let you worry about that. Right? I will follow your schedule. So I give authority over those things in the home to you. Right now it's still under my authority. I will set the schedule. I will say when it's happening and what needs to be done and who needs to do it. I give out the roles. Whereas if you're in charge of it, you will tell me how this is going to be done, when it's going to be done, what's needed for it. So do you see those three places of transition? It's not overnight. If you throw all three keys to another generation, you will blow them up. They cannot handle all three at the same time. So we need to make sure that it's staggered. So there are certain things that in development, and this is partly an organizational thing, but it's also a family thing. If you throw all the things at once, there's too many things to keep track of. As they mature and develop in these things, responsibility grows. As responsibility grows, authority then is like something that you're not going to misuse. Because if I give you the authority to do the lawns whenever you want, and you're like, well, I don't feel like doing them, I'm not going to do them all summer, guess what? We will need a brush hog by the end of the summer. And who's paying for that? But you have to look at it too. Right? And it's these kinds of things. I'm just using very simple illustrations so that you see that what we are developing takes time. It's not overnight. Let's close here, actually. I'll pick up next week where we go through some of these practical ways we can establish some of these things. But if there's one thing to go away with, is be compelled by love. When you're drawn into the family, be compelled by love. Amen?